It's KUOW. I'm Bill Radke. In the early 2000s, 10 Russian nationals were living normal lives in the United States. They went to school, got jobs, and tried to infiltrate the inner circles of U.S. policymakers and businesses to send information back to Russia. One couple was living on Capitol Hill in Seattle. It is a story that James Ross Gardner told in the November issue of Seattle Met magazine.
Operation Ghost Story was the code name for a case that the FBI unraveled in 2010. They arrested 10 Russian nationals who were here posing as Americans. The name Ghost Story comes from the fact that most of these identities were stolen from deceased Americans, going through death records and assuming those identities.
One of the couples, these Russian couples, was stationed here in Seattle. They lived on Capitol Hill.
That's right.
What was the couple's story?
They went by the name of Michael Zottoli and Patricia Mills. They lived on
the names of dead Americans?
The names of dead Americans. Mm-hmm. They lived on Capitol Hill. They were UW students studying business. They got really close to one professor. Michael eventually got a job at a telecommunications firm in Bellevue. So like so many of us, he commuted to work across the lake. And they were here posing as Seattleites.
They were married here, right? They had a King County marriage certificate?
King County marriage certificate. You could look right now and it's still on the books. They were married in 2005.
Do we know whether they were even in love?
I guess we don't know that.
Would we?
They had two children together.
Yeah. I guess I'm thinking of the TV show The Americans.
Well, that's interesting because The Americans is based on this case. So The Americans is set in the 80s just for sort of dramatic effect because the Cold War was during the 80s. But in 2010, the Russians were not on anyone's mind. So I think they set it in the 80s for that purpose. But yeah, even as I was going through some of these case files, I'm a fan of The Americans. And I just think to myself, that's an episode of The Americans. That's the plot of of season two or something.
So. And it is.
And it is.
Okay, so a Russian couple with names of actual deceased Americans living, they're married, they got baby strollers, they live on Capitol Hill. How are they acting?
They did keep to themselves. Most people that observed them described them as quiet. Michael's coworkers thought he was harangued a lot on the phone, presumably by his wife at home.
Mm. He also, typical American marital spat.
I guess he was just trying to make it play. He talked a lot about the Bush administration, complained. I guess he thought that was the Seattle way.
Uh-huh, yes, fitting in.
Yep.
Okay, so they're undercover. They're spying here. I want to talk more about their spying, but you mentioned they went to UW, both of them, to UW Business
That's right.
School?
That's right.
And what was that for?
So they were both studying finance. They were in classes together. One professor in particular, a professor I talked to, described Michael in particular as one of the best students he had had. Every time after class, they would come up and ask a lot of questions.
Why were Russian spies in a UW business program?
Well, the professor that I talked to had some theories, and this has come up recently, that people in his classes, finance class, a lot of those students went on to get jobs at Boeing, at Microsoft, and Amazon. And so the idea is that they may have been trying to get involved in those companies.
Sensitive companies.
That's right.
But this guy ended up in a telecom.
Yep.
In general, you found that business is an espionage target here?
It seems to be in this case. And, recent reporting that's come out in the more recent Russian spy case seems to suggest that was one of the reasons that the consulate, for example, was shut down.
Was this the same circle of spies as I remember several years ago? The beautiful Russian spy, remember, in New York City?
Anna Chapman.
Anna Chapman, yeah.
That's right. And she was actually the same ring of spies. They were all arrested around the same time and sent away around the same time. And so it was all part of the same ring. She was part of Operation Ghost Story as well.
I remember the media coverage.
Yes.
She was on TV a lot, just the beautiful redhead.
Right.
But I don't remember it being taken very seriously.
Right.
It seemed...
Exactly.
Almost not comical, but quaint.
I think...
It's not the Cold War.
That's how I remember it as well. And when I... thought back to this case in 2010, I remembered the case, and it was kind of thought of as sort of a joke.
Yeah.
Almost like Boris and Natasha or James Bond villains or something. And a lot of the headlines kind of played that up.
Yes.
In 2010, I don't think that any of us thought of Russians the way we do now. I think if this case were to come up now, I don't think we would talk about it so playfully.
This Seattle couple was caught. How did that happen?
They were caught along with the other people in the ring. All along, they had been answering to a FBI agent who was posing as one of their handlers. So they had their number all along. The whole time that Michael Zottoli and Patricia Mills were in Seattle, the FBI knew. In fact, at one point, they slipped into their apartment and found the tools of espionage, radiograms, the use of static to send across on shortwave long
distances. Yeah, that's a radiogram. They were hearing in Seattle. Mm-hmm. They were hearing these static transmissions, and they had the codes to decipher them.
And the FBI found some of those code books. They also found evidence of encrypted information in photos online, like a photo of a rose, encrypted with information and directions.
So they were allowed to spy in Seattle. I guess we wouldn't know whether somebody in Seattle got compromised because what the FBI was willing to let them get away with temporarily?
Right. We actually don't know all the details. The FBI's files on this case, about up to 80% of their files that are out in the public are redacted. And those are going to be released in 2035. So a lot of this information we don't know. And the story that I wrote was based on what was available, trying to piece this together. So we actually don't know entirely what they were up to.
So is this couple in jail? Are they back in Russia?
They're back in Russia. Vladimir Putin welcomed them as heroes.
How come we didn't jail them?
Russia released four of our spies.
Spy exchange.
Exactly. And both Michael and Patricia, as we know them, both hold positions of companies in Russia today.
Did you make any attempt to try to talk to them?
I tried my hardest to try to get a hold of them. They're both on LinkedIn. They're both, I think they're
really?
Facebook for a minute. Yes.
They're on Facebook,
yes.
Of course.
Yes.
Well, actually, that brings up the part of the reason this seems all more serious now than it did when it was quaint, as you said, a bit of a joke, is that we have the Russian meddling in the intervening years.
Exactly. And that's kind of what I was attempting to do with the story is, you know, I'd remembered that case from 2010. I thought, what would happen if we sort of dust off that old case to see if there's anything new to understand about it? I think it's interesting that Michael Pizzottoli and Patricia Mills were kind of doing a more primitive version of what happened in 2016 and 2017, except for they were trying to physically pass off as Americans, where now you can be a bot on the other side of the world and not have to be here. You can still influence things that way.
You don't have to be here having fake spats with your wife.
Exactly.
Or real spats.
Right.
Who knows what that was?
Right.
Do we know what this couple was trying to steal in particular?
From everything that I've looked at and who I've talked to, it wasn't necessarily stealing anything. It was getting in with policymakers, having influence. In fact, one of the transmissions that was intercepted by the FBI stated that mission, basically gain influence with U.S. policymakers. And so I think that's why you have business students. There were some in the spy ring were trying to get involved with lobbyists in D.C. So I don't know that these were the kinds of spies that were stealing secrets so much as trying to find ways in.
And one way to American policymakers is through the business world.
That's right.
Maybe now more than ever in Washington,
sure.
D.C.,
yeah.
With a businessman in the White House.
Right.
What did you take away from your reporting on this Russian spy ring in Seattle and beyond?
I think, you know, looking at this case, I recognized, you know, as we all have, just how determined Russia has always been. You know, it all caught our attention in 2016 and 2017, you know, the interference. But to look back at this case, you see just how much they were willing to put into it. Physically having spies here, taking up identities, living among us, trying to pass as Americans. It resonated.
And in case anyone has the idea that Russian spying in the United States is a Trump phenomenon, it's far from it.
Exactly.
James Ross Gardner, editor-in-chief of Seattle Met magazine. His story, The Russian Spies Who Fooled Seattle, was in the November issue of the magazine. James, thanks again.
Thank you.
Last week, of course, the White House decided to expel 60 Russian diplomats, and they closed the Russian consulate in Seattle. The administration says their actions, quote, make the United States safer by reducing Russia's ability to spy on Americans. Seattle's Russian consulate officially closes today. You're listening to The Record on KOW Seattle. We're going to talk with Dr. Tara Westover, author of the new memoir, Education, in just a moment. Don't go away.